and the Game Nashville app. Taking you through all of the high school football action around the mid-state.
Let's go!
This is the Game Blitz with Jake Wallman and Parker Kelly. Your sports live here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
And good morning, Nashville. 102.5, 106.3 The Game. The Game Blitz coming to you on this cold December Saturday morning. The first Saturday in December is Championship Saturday. It's Championship Saturday across high school football, Championship Saturday across college football, and we're going to get it started with you. Parker Kelly, we get to kick off the last Saturday of the high school football season. How does it feel?
It's a bittersweet time of year. Really excited for a lot of these teams that get to be state champions, maybe state champions for the first time.
Yeah.
Our next guest, who's actually about to come on in a couple seconds, may have something to say about that. So, very excited to talk to him.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time for the Macon County Tigers as they make their first trip to a state title game in school history. And we're now joined by head coach Kyle Shoulders of the Macon County Tigers. Coach, good morning from Chattanooga.
Good morning, fellas.
Well, Coach, this is something that all high school coaches dream of when they take their head coaching job. What is the feeling like just around Lafayette and around the Macon County program as you guys get set to take the field today at 11 a.m. Eastern?
Man, it's really exciting for not just our guys, but for our cheerleaders, our band, our student section, the Macon Mob, the community that has followed us in great numbers all throughout the year. It's just a great opportunity and a great event for them, and look forward to being able to celebrate their efforts that they've displayed all year long.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I've been following you guys, throughout the year and your progress and stuff. And I want to go back to the Anderson County game. The resiliency that it took you guys to, for you guys to win that game in overtime, 43-41, is usually built in the summer, in spring practice. And, when you kind of struggle, when, your players can kind of struggle at times to find the resiliency to kind of keep going. What was the message during that game?
I think the message has been the same all year long, and that's just not try to outdo themselves, just be the best version of them. And at the end of the day, it's either good enough or it's not. And more times than not this year, it's been good enough. This is still high school football. It's still supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be pure. The guys get to experience it together. And it's one of the few things left where you put your own wants to the side and you play for somebody else, and there's just a sense of togetherness within our team. And I think that has been the message all year long, that don't put any more pressure on yourself than you have to, and just don't forget through all this, this game's supposed to be fun, and get an opportunity for them to continue to enjoy themselves with one another and make some memories that'll last a lifetime.
And speaking of memories, Coach, you're in your seventh year with the Macon County Tigers, and kind of piggybacking off of that Anderson County question, you got to see the goalpost go down last week, and I don't think I've ever heard of that at the high school level. What was that like, just seeing how your fans reacted after that game to punch your ticket to the school's first state title run in a bit?
What an experience that those guys got to witness, or whole community was able to be involved in. A story that I'm sure will be talked and probably even made bigger as years go by, I'm sure. But, it was a very special night. We have a very rabid fan base, that have supported this program through a number of somewhat unsuccessful years from a win standpoint. And for them to get the opportunity to witness something is pretty special as well. It was kind of crazy, but just thankful for all those that have been so supportive that they tore those things down and marched them on into town and dumped them in what's called Sullivan's Pond. We've joked all week that, you know, the Tennessee's got the Cumberland River, but the Macon County Tigers have got Sullivan's Pond where they were able to dump those Yopos. So pretty cool experience for sure.
And we're talking to head coach Kyle Shoulders of Macon County. Coach, you talk about trying to not make this moment too big for your team and really focusing on having fun, because at the end of the day, this is a kids game that we're playing and it's supposed to be fun, but at the same time, it's business. And this is the school's first state title appearance. How do you go about balancing of having fun and relishing in the moment, but at the same time being focused and taking care of what needs to get taken care of?
Those things have never really been a challenge for this bunch. This is a very mature, experienced group. They know what's on the line. Matter of fact, they're probably going to be more businesslike than we may want them to be. You know, we want them to relax. And in order to do that, we try to keep our schedule somewhat the same all throughout the week. Now, we traveled to Chattanooga round one and to play Salty Daisy. And we told our guys at that time that that was just a dress rehearsal for today. So we've kind of done this routine throughout the summer. We traveled far and wide and stayed many nights overnight, playing 7-on-7 and, you know, playing all day one day, getting up the very next with blisters on your feet at daylight to play again and playing some really good talent in doing so. So we're somewhat accustomed to, you know, the trip that we've taken down here. It's somewhat, you know, the norm for us. So while it is our first time to the state championship game, it's not our first trip such as this to Chattanooga.
Coach, I want to get into the region that you guys come out of. I have a little familiarity with the Upper Cumberland and, you know, teams like Upperman and White County, and that's a really, really tough region, you know, for people that are here in the mid-state that don't really know a lot about Cookeville and that sort of thing. Upperman is usually the team that comes out of that region, and I know they got the best of you in the regular season, and then there was the rematch in the playoffs that you guys were able to get the best of them 28-15, and they actually got the best of you last year in the playoffs. I think the semifinal round. Was the playoff game against Upperman, was that a lot of bulletin board material avoiding what happened last year?
No, I think it was more about focusing on ourselves. Man, they beat us three times for a total of 11 points. So we had great opportunities to win those games previously. And it just didn't work out for us. So we knew what we were capable of. We knew what we should have took care of earlier in the season. But, you know, I think, you know, we kind of did some self-reflection there mid-season and changed some things up and decided to quit worrying about everybody else and just worry about us and be the best version of us and let the chips fall where they may. Those are the things that we can control. And I think that has provided a sense of peace and allowed our guys to kind of relax and understand that there are certain things that they can control and certain things that they can't. And let's focus on the ones that we can.
And then you talk about the things that you guys can control. Your only playoff win at home was the win against Anderson County. Could you feel the team kind of adopt that road warrior mentality as you guys went through the playoffs?
Well, you know, we had some high goals and high aspirations before the season. We knew that we had the ability to be sitting here today playing for a state championship. We dropped the one-point loss to Upperman. Nobody blinked. We went right back to work. But then we dropped a game that was somewhat uncharacteristic to a really good White County team. And at that time, we realized that we probably couldn't finish any better than third in our region, meaning that we were not going to have the luxury of hosting a lot of those early playoff rounds. And getting the playoffs back to our home stadium was one of our guys' goals. And we knew to make the semifinals was the only way to achieve that. So I think that was a lot of the motivating factor of those first few rounds, is just try to get that thing back home for our community.
And Coach, I don't want to give you any rat poison here, but your team is on an 8-game win streak since your last loss. And since the playoffs started, your offense has been averaging about 32 points per game on the offensive side of the ball, and then on defense, only giving up about 11 points per game. But you're going up against a really good team, I'm sure you already know, in Melrose, and they have a certain player by the name of Jamarion Morrow, who's a 3-star athlete committed to Texas A&M. What's it like preparing for him and what all he brings to the table, and just a really talented Melrose team overall?
You know, it definitely is challenging. You know, not only is he challenging to try to defend or account for when he's playing defense even, but the fact that he has such well-rounded athletes and players around him too makes that difficult. So you can't just focus on one player. They're a really good football team that have really excelled over the last number of weeks. You know, they got a big win. They celebrated in very similar fashion last week when beating Pearl Cone. So I think there's a lot of similarities really there with the two programs and their motivation to try to get here. So challenging, definitely. However, we feel like we've tried to prepare our guys for, especially in the off season, summer, preseason, traveling far and wide and trying to put these guys in front of the best talent that we could find in whatever aspect we were trying to compete in. So we've done what we could in preparing for a game like this, and just hopefully it pays off today.
And, Coach, I mentioned earlier in the interview that you're in your seventh season with the program, and you have some familiarity around Macon County. It was your first job while you were in college, if I'm correct, working as an assistant coach at Macon County. So you have some familiarity with this program. How quickly did you see Macon County being able to make it to the state title for the first time in school history when you took over as head coach 7 years ago?
You know, I don't think anyone can really predict that. I think you go in things sometimes blindfolded from that aspect a little bit. You take a job like Macon, or really coaching in general, for many reasons other than just wins and losses, man. I mean, the Macon County program is extremely special to me. I'm an alumni there. I've got kids in the school system that'll be coming through there sooner than later. And, you know, it's my hometown. The people there are just so special to me. So while I was extremely grateful for having an opportunity to come back home and us do what we've done, I don't – to say that was a forethought that we were going to be sitting in the state championship 7 years later, I think would be somewhat unfair. However, we've just kept our nose to the grind and, you know, tried to do things the right way. And our kids have really bought into what we've asked them to do. And their level of commitment really is the reason why we're here.
Coach, 546 points scored on the offensive side of the ball this year. That's the highest that you guys have put up in your tenure at Macon County. What has it been? What's different about this team and this team's offense running that single wing, that option type style compared to years past?
You know, I think it's probably just familiarity. I mean, we've been able to build on what we've put in. There's always an adjustment period, as you know, implementing any type of offense and defense. And most people, you know, most coaches taking a job would ask for 4 or 5 years to get those things installed. And I think that you've seen growth over the last number of years, and you've seen continuous improvement. And I think it goes back to the expectations. Our guys have now realized what the standard is within our program, what's going to be asked of them, what the expectation is. And then just becoming more familiar with our offense and us being able to build on that and put a wrinkle in here, a wrinkle in there, and it all fall within our concepts, and things just kind of mesh really well. We've got some really, really good players on our football team that make that thing go. I think too many times as a fan, as a administration, as a community, sometimes and others get way too much credit. When in all reality, it's all about our guys and our players, and you know, they're the reason we're able to do what we do.
Well, Coach, you know, you mentioned the players being the reason that you guys are allowed to do what you do, and I know you've got a really, really great group of guys, and those guys are going to rally around you as you rally around them today down in Chattanooga. Good luck today against Melrose today, later this morning.
Thank you, guys, man. We appreciate you guys, what you do, and we really appreciate you thinking of us and including us.
Absolutely, Coach. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
That was head coach Kyle Shoulders of the Macon County Tigers, his football program, going for their first state title today down in Chattanooga. Kickoff is at 11 a.m. Eastern on MyTV30 if you're looking to watch that locally. We'll come back. We'll do a quick scoreboard over the last couple days of high school football competition down in Chattanooga. You're listening to the Game Blitz on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. 102.5, 106.3, the game blitz. Jake Wallman, Parker Kelly with you this morning as we kick off state championship Saturday. Three more games on the high school docket today with Melrose and Macon County kicking off at 11 a.m. Eastern. If you missed our interview with Kyle Shoulders, that will be on the podcast. You can subscribe to Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And Parker mentioned it before the interview, you know, We start football season in general, I think, and when it starts, we're like, you know, we got 3 months of this and 4 months of this if you go by the NFL and college football schedules, and it's just it's gonna go by so slow, and it never does. It never does.
It seems like we started this show last weekend, and boom, we're already to the end. So
yeah, time flies by when you're having fun. But we're going to get to a quick scoreboard recapping the last couple days, and we're going to break down some games before we preview the 6A state title game later in the show. For the final time in 2024, let's hit the music. State championship week across Tennessee.
For the final time this year.
For the final time this year. On Thursday, CPA outlasted BGA 38-26. CPA gets their state title. That was something that Parker and I both saw coming, I think probably since midway through the year. Congrats to Ingle Martin and the CPA Lions. NCS topped Columbia Academy 49-21. That one pretty similar to the regular season battle that took place in Columbia earlier this year. McCauley beat Baylor 27-21. I think McCauley was up 27-0. Is that correct, Parker? And Baylor cut it to 27-21 before McCauley was able to hold on.
Baylor got off to the 21-0.
Oh, Baylor got off to the
21-0. And then McCauley scored 27 unanswered to win.
Wow. That just adds to the rivalry that those two have, both being from Chattanooga as well, so a fun twist on that one. Yesterday, Alcoa beats Westview 40-21. Alcoa has won 10 straight titles in Tennessee. Parker, when we think of dynasties, we think of, you know, 3, maybe 4 years, but 10 years in a row is impressive.
Yeah, that's something else, I gotta say. And I believe I called this last week.
You did. I think you did, actually, as well. I think you did. So congrats. Congrats to you. Mace, Memphis Academy of Science and Engineering, topped South Pittsburgh 36-14. I think this one might be one of the biggest surprises, in my opinion. I thought South Pitt would keep this game close. It was close. It was 14-14 at halftime. Mace really put themselves in tough spots yesterday with a lot of penalties, a lot of, you know, just illegal procedure penalties before the snap and stuff. And to be able to outlast South Pitt like that speaks to the talent that this particular young football program has.
And when you think of Division I single A, you think of South Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people thought that South Pittsburgh was going to win this, myself included. So to see Mace kind of keep them at an arm's length distance like this was pretty impressive.
And
so
I was able to see the halftime interview with the principal of Mace yesterday, with Murphy Fair. They're only a 9-year-old charter school. They're the oldest charter school in Tennessee. So to be less than a decade old and get that first state title game, that first state title win, that's really impressive.
It is very impressive. It kind of reminds me of a Stewart's Creek-like run, except Stewart's Creek didn't make it that far, but they're still a young school,
yeah,
a young program. And Mace is just the same. They're very young, not even 10 years old, and they're already winning their first state championship.
Yeah, absolutely. And then last night, in another surprise game of the weekend, Sevier County topped Page 27-20. We're going to talk about that one here in just a second. And then today, along with Macon County and Melrose, Marion County and Milan at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central Time on MyTV 30, and Oakland and Houston at 7 p.m. Eastern. That one we will get to in shortly. But now we're going to recap D2. And really good game, I would say, for the most part, yesterday with CPA and BGA. BGA was able to cut it to 17-13 after a 17-7 halftime, or 17-10, excuse me, halftime game. And I think BGA just kind of ran out of firepower.
Well, here's what CPA does. Here's what their style of play is. And this goes back to all the way to last year, and even when I went to go watch them in week one versus Brentwood Academy. They control the line of scrimmage. They kind of lean on you throughout the game. Lean on you, lean on you, lean on you. And then all of a sudden, you just don't have the horses to keep up. And yeah, I think that's what happened to BGA. BGA has been very explosive on offense really all year. But when you're going up against CPA, who is physically imposes their will on the offensive and defensive line, they run the ball at will, and they continue to lean on you as the game progresses. It just gets too much for teams.
Yeah, I mean, you touch on the running game for CPA there. Rawls Patterson, 27 carries, 336 yards, 4 touchdowns for the Lions. That ranks third most in title game history in terms of rushing yards. Pretty solid way to go out of 2024.
And 12.5 yards per carry. So he's averaging more than a first down every time he touches the football.
Yeah. I mean, CPA just doing what they did all year. And, I mean, really good showing from BGA, I believe, as well. Caden Marable, the junior quarterback. We talked to Bobby Bentley last week from BGA, and he talked about how impressed he was of Caden Marable's progression. 26 for 40, 323 yards, 2 touchdowns, so really no slouch on the BGA side of the ball. I just think that, the seniority that this CPA team has just kind of outlasted BGA and their up-and-coming team that, I think we're going to see around a lot more over the next several years.
And the thing about CPA is they went on that great run that they had last year in route to winning their first of 2 straight state championships. And then this year, we know that they had their quarterback returning in Hudson Chance. We've talked about him before. They have their running back in Rawls Patterson. They have a lot of seniority returning, like you just mentioned. And there were several games this year where, man, they're just, I mean, really, throughout the season, dominant, just dominant. There were a couple games where it would be like, okay, maybe this will be a slip-up spot for CPA. Nope, they just bulldozed right through them. And then they do this all the way to the state championship game. They're like a boa constrictor where the game may start off pretty close, but as the game goes on, slowly they start to tighten their grip a little bit. And then soon the game is just out of reach. And I got to give credit to BGA for they tried to make a little late comeback.
Yeah, that was one thing that I was going to get to next. It was 24-13, and then CPA tacked on 2 pretty quick touchdowns. And you're sitting there and you're like, well, this one's over. And then CPA or BGA get an onside kick. No, they score onside kick. Somehow Arnett Hayes gets through the mass and gets into the end zone. They were going to, and then they tried to go for two to cut it to a 10-point game. They didn't get it. But, I mean, BGA really tried to make a run there at the end. And I think that's something that you really got to be positive about. And some of these stats are really misleading. I mean, BGA put up 513 offensive yards. You know, that's almost 100 more yards than CPA did. And then I think they had, yeah, almost five more minutes of time of possession as well. So
the difference is that is misleading when you're just looking at the box score is CPA dominated at the line of scrimmage, which was the run game. But when they got the ball, they scored quick. That's why time of possession may have looked different. That's why BGA led in that category.
And
here's another thing.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with
BGA
this.
BGA had 14 penalties for 117 yards.
Yep.
Whereas CPA only had 7 for 65. That's not CPA standard as far as penalties are concerned, but when you give a team like CPA that much of an edge in the penalty category, it's not a recipe for success.
No. And, you know, a couple other notes. 5 for 13 on third downs for BGA, 5 for 7 for CPA. You know, so you know when you get those when you get a chance to get CPA off the field like that, I think you got to take the chance. When you get a possession, when you get a chance to prolong a drive, if you're BGA, you got to take that chance as well. 2 for 5 on fourth downs as well for BGA. So three more chances to kind of prolong a drive that BGA didn't capitalize on. And then CPA going perfect in the red zone, 5 for 5. You know, those are all the differences in a state title game where you get the chance to, you know, come at the king.
Yeah, and CPA didn't really put themselves in a position where they had to convert much on third down. Only 7 tries throughout the whole game. And when you convert 5 out of those 7 times, you don't really get off the field much. And when you're scoring as quick as they do, and the run game's just clicking, there's not much BGA can do.
Yep, not much.
At that point, it just becomes who's more physically imposing. And CPA was really all game. And I know BGA did make that late push, but at the end of the day, they just dug themselves in too deep of a hole. And when CPA is the one on the other side, not many times you're going to climb out of that.
Yeah, and you know, now moving to the next Division II game that, you know, we want to recap, Columbia Academy and NCS. I remember last week we talked about this game, and we both agreed that Columbia Academy to keep it close, to make it a game, they were going to have to run the ball. 212 yards of, you know, 212 yards rushing on offense, and NCS was just able to really just overpower them. 309 yards total of kick return yardage for NCS.
And I think I said this last week, that Columbia Academy, when they played Nashville Christian at the midway point through the season, got completely ran through.
Yeah, they did.
And they were going to have to play a perfect game in order to keep it close with NCS, because NCS has a lot of firepower. Their 5-star quarterback, Jared Curtis, who we've talked about ad nauseum. But when you – this is really – if you don't hear anything else I say, hear this. NCS forced 3 interceptions by Columbia Academy quarterback Monte Baldwin. Columbia Academy also lost a fumble. So they lost the turnover battle 4-1. And you get four turnovers to NCS, you're already setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
Because you can't match them athlete for athlete. So you got to be technically sound in everything that you do. So when you're turning the ball over 4 times, you're just not going to win.
No, you're not going to win. And they were also able to keep Monte Baldwin out of the end zone as well. So, you know, when you neutralize the weapons like that, and you can take control of your own opportunities, you know, you're setting yourself up for a pretty good day. When we come back, we will touch on the 5A state championship recap with Sevier County and Page last night. Pretty good game at the end of it. Page unfortunately falls short 27-20. We're going to talk about it coming up next as you listen to the Game Blitz, 102.5, 106.3, the game. 102.5, 106.3, the game. The Game Blitz. Jake Wallman, Parker Kelly with you this morning as we wrap up the high school football season. And we're going to wrap up 5A now as Sevier County and Page met in Chattanooga last night for the 5A state championship. Page looking to finally get the monkey off their back of three straight state title appearances and not coming away with a win. Parker, I felt like Page going into this game was the hot hand. They're the, you know, they're the team to beat. They're, you know, you're trying to come at the king, the guy that has been in the conversation for three straight years, and Sevier County had one shot, and I think they took it.
Well, I don't think if we were talking to Charles Rathbone that he would refer to Page as the king because they haven't won a state title yet.
Right.
They've been to four straight, and I feel like this was their best chance in the last 4 years to get that win, because this isn't a common matchup between Sevier County and Page. They don't play all that often.
No.
So, but this was the chance for Page. They have three players committed to Division I FBS universities. They have tons of talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And they've been very stout on defense all year. I don't believe they gave up a single touchdown in the regular season.
They had given up, they said it last night during the broadcast, I think they had given up three, and they may have all come during the playoffs.
Yeah. And Page's defense, real, and I believe I saw you tweet this out last night, but that defense really came to life in the first quarter. But then the Smoky Bears got up off the deck and responded with 17 points in that second quarter. And I'll tell you, that blocked field goal before halftime,
it
was
really
the difference.
It really turned the game on its head. We'll go back to that defensive point. Page had it deep in Smoky Bear territory, and I think they turned it over on downs. Correct me if I'm wrong. Sevier County gets the ball back, and then Page forces, was it another turnover on downs? And then, you know, William Weebush was starting at quarterback, the Wake Forest commit. Grand Jean, their starter, was available, and he did actually come into the game later on, but he did not start. William Weebush started off the scoring with a 10-yard run. And then Sevier County was able to answer with, you know, those 17 points. Page had not attempted a field goal longer than, was it, I think, 19 yards all season. And, you know, to ask your kicker for a 62-yarder, that's a big ask. And just, I mean, you could feel the momentum just kind of get sucked out like a balloon when that field goal kick was blocked.
Because Page got off to the quick 7-0 start, and, you know, you're feeling pretty good. But then Sevier County responds with the field goal. Then they get a touchdown. It's 10-7. And then the blocked field goal returned for a touchdown. And you're right, it just took the air out of the game. And Page also made a late comeback, but at that point it was just too late.
It was 27-13 when I got back to it. And they were, you know, that last drive, or not that last drive, the drive before last, they get down deep into Smoky Bear territory, and there was a sequence where Grand Jean was in a QB, and they get a first down. It was the next set of downs. They get a first down. He gets up to the line. They spike the ball. And part of me feels like he did not really need to spike that ball there, because the clock stopped after the first down. I think you have time to get up and to the line, call a play, and attempt to get more yardage. But when he spiked that ball on first down, it threw off the whole sequence. And he thought that, you know, they ended up going backwards after that play, and he thought fourth down was third down. And it just, like, at that point, I feel like you were like, all right, I don't think they're going to win this game.
I honestly, and I know there was a lot of time when this happened, but after the field goal, I felt like Sevier County just had all the momentum and that they weren't going to lose.
Well, and I see what your point is, but they made another interesting point in the broadcast. Page was also down last week at halftime as well. And they come out and didn't allow a single point in the third and fourth quarter. So there was, for me, there was reason to believe that, you know, Page can get into the locker room, they can adjust some things, and then they can come out and they can play a much better second half. And I think they had met their match last night in Sevier County, a really, really good Sevier County team.
Yeah, and since giving up that 17-point second quarter, only gave up 10 points in the two quarters after that. Sevier County scored that touchdown in the third and then got the field goal in the fourth, but the defense did make some adjustments after a very uncharacteristic second quarter, but at the end of the day, it was just not enough.
Another interesting stat, you know, we talk about how good that Page defense has been all year. Sevier County had three sacks to Page's one last night.
Didn't get enough pressure on the quarterback.
Yep. Didn't get enough pressure on the quarterback for Page, and it kind of comes back to bite them, unfortunately, as they fall 27-20. And now, you know, we'll get back. You mentioned in the break, you know, that McCallie-Baylor game, and, you know, we can go back to that one real quickly as well. McCallie jumped out to a 21-0 lead, or Baylor, excuse me. McCallie gets a touchdown right at the end of the first half. I felt like that was really big for McCallie, and that was the beginning of them rattling off 27 unanswered points.
Yeah, and how crazy is this? So last year, this was a rematch of last year's Division II AAA state championship game. McCallie won last year over Baylor 34-28, a six-point margin. This year, a six-point margin. That shows you just how close these two programs are. But for Baylor, I just feel, I mean, if we're calling it spade a spade, kind of unacceptable, considering how much. So I can name off three guys that are going to play Power 4 football next year on Baylor's offense. And that team is just way too talented to score 21 points in that first quarter and then not do anything the rest of the game and let McCallie handle business the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Especially against a rival.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make much sense.
Doesn't make much sense. And if you look at the yardage differential and stuff like that, yeah, I mean, McCallie outgained them 429 to 354, and they had 20 more offensive plays. Baylor jumping out to that 21-0 lead, really, really deceiving about how that game went. And I mean, congrats to McCallie. I mean, that you weathered the storm. You took every punch that Baylor had, and you were able to. I mean, Baylor didn't. I mean, they didn't surrender the lead until 15 seconds left in the game.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a coach, if you're
you
a coach on Baylor,
right.
McCallie's side, I mean, that was the perfect second half of football.
Yeah,
they probably ever played.
Yeah, you did everything right if you're Baylor. And you still come up short. That's really unfortunate. And I know that's just going to add to the rivalry that those two have when they get together next year.
And on Baylor's side, I think what contributed to their lack of offensive success since... So I believe I misspoke. They scored 21 points in two quarters, but their third and final touchdown of the game came with 9:44 left in the second.
Right.
So, I mean, it was almost three first quarter touchdowns, but Baylor did not. So, if you think about it, they have a running back named Shakai Mills Knight, who's committed to Ole Miss. He's the second ranked player in the state of Tennessee. They have a wide receiver, Joakim Dotson, who's committed to UT. They have another wide receiver named Cam Sparks, who is also a three-star wide receiver. Between Dotson and Sparks, the duo had 9 receptions for 88 yards. Cam Sparks had 3 receptions for 8 yards.
Yeah, that's...
You got to get him more... You got to get both of them, I would argue, more touches than just 9.
Well, and I mean, looking at even the production after that, 2 catches for Caden Dewey, 2 catches for... And you're probably going to have to correct me on this name. Biseli Ilunga for Baylor, 1 catch for 69 yards for, you know, Theodore. I mean, they just didn't get the guys that needed the ball, I think, total, you know, period, the guys that needed the ball enough touches.
Yep, and Mills Knight had 14 carries for 43 yards, averaging 3 yards a carry. Now, he wasn't their primary, or he got the most carries last night, but their most productive back was George's, who had 10 carries for 119 yards. He averaged a little under 12 yards a carry, so he was good.
Yeah,
But when you also have a back like Shekhi Mills Knight, he needs to be more productive as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so that's going to put a wrap on D2 for us as McCauley outlasts Baylor 27-21. Coming up next, we're going to preview 6A in a rematch of 2023 as Oakland and Houston get together later tonight, in Chattanooga. We're going to talk about that. We're going to look back last year, what Oakland couldn't do to win that game, and what they may have to do tonight in order to get out a win. You're listening to The Game Blitz on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Gotta get a little Christmas cheer in here. It's too sad in this room.
That time of year.
102.5, 106.3, The Game. Final segment of the year for The Game Blitz as we look now to 6A as Oakland and Houston meet for the second straight year in Chattanooga for a state title on the 6A landscape. Looking at this game, Parker, you know, I pulled up last year's stats on the TWSAA website, and there's a theme that I noticed. Oakland, in terms of first downs, they had 9 rushing first downs to Houston's 12, so you know, pretty even there. 1 passing first down for a total of 14 net passing yards, 3 for 11 for 3 interceptions. I think if Oakland wins today, I think it's because of the passing game.
Really? Because I am inclined to think the opposite.
Well, I think that they, you know, they looked at last year's, I think they have looked at last year's performance and thought, you know, we got to be better. I mean, you put up 188 rushing yards last year, which is impressive, and that's, you know, I mean, that's all well and good, but you can't go into a state title game so one-dimensional.
Here's the thing about Oakland is since Kyler Creasy has been their quarterback, they're not really a throwing team. So they have been very reliant on the run game, especially when you have the running backs that they have and the horses that they have. That's kind of been their style of play. That's what's worked. So when you're previewing a matchup like this and you have two very even teams, it's kind of hard to find the differences and who might be better and what, since they're both just so good. But so this is a rematch of last year's state championship. Houston won 24-9. And as I was going back, I was looking at some stats. Last year, the Mustangs had 239 yards rushing for 5.7 yards per carry. So I think for this game, two things have to go right for Oakland. One, their run defense has to step up. You can't allow Houston to have that many yards on the ground because Houston's not a running or a throwing team either. They're not going to get it done through the air. Meanwhile, Oakland, since the playoffs have started, they've been averaging 36.5 points per game on offense, and they've been averaging over 200 yards per game on the ground. So I think in order for Oakland to win this game, one, they have to play good run defense, and two, they have to be able to run the football at will.
Yeah, you know, kind of like a CPA style type thing where you know you're leaning on your offensive line. Another thing that I'm calling on the Oakland defense to do is get pressure on the quarterback. Houston registered 3 sacks last year in this game for 21 total yards. Oakland had none. So, you know, where's the Oakland defense going to step up? They also only had 2 tackles for loss last year. So, you know, this Oakland defense, I think, is going to have to really answer the bell in this game and provide that pressure that they didn't have last year.
And we've talked about this too, that Oakland has had some weak spots that Oakland teams in the past haven't had. But the fact that they're Oakland carries a lot of weight mm-hmm. and means a lot, because Oakland is still Oakland at the end of the day.
They definitely are the king.
And they're right back in the state championship. And if I had to put some money on it, I bet this is who they wanted in the rematch.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a lot of bulletin board material, I'm sure. And I'm sure it's been that way since they found out that they were playing Houston again. I see this being a slugfest. I don't see this being either team runs away. I see this being a fist fight in the trenches. And it's really going to be about what team, who wants it more. Because this is prime time on Saturday night, high school football for bragging rights.
Yeah, and you know, you're looking at the drive chart for Oakland and you know, how things went. You know, you go punt, kickoff, punt, interception, missed field goal, downs. And I think that was when, minute 16, I believe that's when the game or the halftime came to conclusion. You really got to prolong those drives. You know, just, you know, kind of putting things together and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, also winning time of possession for Oakland is going to be, but you know, you mentioned that run game, at how they can just grind teams down and just control the pace of the game. I think Oakland can do that tonight and win this game.
And the reason I disagreed when you were first saying that they had to make some plays in the passing game, that's not who Oakland's been this year. It's not who they've been in previous years. And that's not really a time to change your offensive identity now when you're at the last game of the season, Kyler Creasy's senior year. It's just not the time for that. You don't want to be one way and then change it in the last game. You want to do what has been working for you, because clearly it's worked for Oakland.
I mean, I'm not saying that they have to come out and throw for like 300 yards.
Yeah. I understand.
But I say that I am saying that, you know, like hit a splash play. You know, throw for 150 yards, and then, you know, you tack on another 175, 200 on the ground, I think is how Oakland can win this game.
Control time of possession, run the football, stop the run for Houston.
Yeah, and hit one or two pass plays that can set up that run game further for Oakland. And I think if they do that, they're coming back to I think they're coming back to Murfreesboro with another state title.
Yep, and again, lots of bulletin board material. We'll see how fat and happy Houston is, since they're on a 8-game win streak. So I think it's pretty interesting, because Houston also got off to some early season / midseason struggles. They lost two in a row at one point. Their last loss came on September 27th. They lost to Tupelo 35-13. And then the week prior, lost to Whitehaven 21-14. But since then, they've rattled off 8 straight. I don't see Houston as being a team that's going to get fat and happy. I think this will be a really great game, and I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to line up with all the other great games that we have on this championship Saturday. Texas and Georgia. You know, I think you said you're going to the Big Ten title game.
I will
be
in Indianapolis tonight. I will be there.
I mean, hey.
I'm very excited.
Indianapolis is only 4 hours away.
That's what I'm saying. And tickets were pretty dirt cheap. I think it's because a lot of Oregon fans didn't want to make the trip to Indiana, which
makes
sense.
That makes sense. Parker, as we have 1 minute left in this week's show, give me one big moment that has stood out to you this year.
Oh, man.
I know that's a big ask. I'm putting you on the spot like this. But
it's actually, I can rattle one off the dome here. Ravenwood and Oakland. What week was that? It was October 24th.
Yeah, I believe
right?
That may
if
have
I'm
been,
right.
That may have been
October 24th, 25th.
The second to last or third to last week of the year.
Yes.
That's both
because
teams were 8-0.
If I remember correctly, it was the. No, it was. Because it was the same week that FRA played CPA.
Yes.
And I wanted to be able to go to both and couldn't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That was probably my game of the year. in which Ravenwood won 32-31 in overtime. Femi Babalola with the two-point conversion to give Ravenwood the lead. And I think after that game, everyone was saying that we were going to see a rematch in the state championship between those two teams, and it almost happened.
Yeah.
But that was definitely my game of the year, and it was a very fun game to watch.
My moment of the year, Father Ryan knocking off MBA. You know, we kind of have we banged the drum all year for Father Ryan, and I know they unfortunately lost, you know, their head coach and Brian Rector to another job, but I think that the success that Father Ryan saw this year is going to propel them to success down the road.
Nick Frazier, if you're listening, that one was for you.
Yes, it was. We'll talk to Nick Frazier a little bit later as Forest Company comes up at 9 o'clock. But for all the guests that have joined us, for you know Parker for coming in every Saturday morning and joining me at 7 o'clock. You know, we're really really happy that you know Chase gave us the opportunity to do this show this year, and we hope to be back next year with you guys, don't we, Parker?
Absolutely.
And for all the guests that have joined us, for all the coaches that took time out of their Saturday mornings to join us this year, really, really happy for you guys. Thanks for the time. And, you know, good luck to all the teams today that go for a state title.
Absolutely. And most importantly, we thank the listeners because without you, this wouldn't be possible.
Absolutely. We thank the listeners for a hungry, hungry drive here in the Mid-State for high school football. For Parker Kelly, for Jake Wallman, myself, for all the coaches that joined us this year, you've been listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game and The Game Blitz.